by imitating the processes of nature, began to make bread. The grain, he says, once taken into the mouth, is crushed by the flinty teeth, which meet in hostile encounter, and whatever grain slips out, the tongue turns back to the self-same teeth. Then it is blended into a mass that it may the more easily pass down the slippery throat. When this has readied the stomach, it is digested by the stomach's equable heat. Then, and not till then, it is assimilated with the body. Following this pattern, he goes on, someone placed two rough stones, the one above the other, in imitation of the teeth, one set of which is stationary and awaits the motion of the other set. Then, by the rubbing of the one stone against the other, the grain is crushed and brought back again and again, until by frequent rubbing it is reduced to powder. Then, this man sprinkled the meal with water, and by continued manipulation, subdued the mass and molded the loaf. This loaf was, at first, baked by hot ashes, or by an earthen vessel glowing hot. Later on, ovens were gradually discovered, and the other devices whose heat will render obedience to the sage's will. Posidonius came very near declaring that even the cobbler's trade was the discovery of the wise man. Reason did indeed devise all these things, but it was not right reason. It was man, but not the wise man, that discovered them. Just as they invented ships in which we cross rivers and seas. Ships fitted with sails for the purpose of catching the force of the winds. Ships with rudders added at the stern in order to turn the vessel's course in one direction or another. The model followed was the fish, which steers itself by its tail. And by its slightest motion on this side or on that, bends its swift course. But, says Posidonius, the wise man did indeed discover all these things. They were, however, too petty for him to deal with himself, and so he entrusted them to his meaner assistants. Not so. These early inventions were thought out by no other class of men than those who have them in charge today. We know that certain devices have come to light only within our own memory, such as the use of windows which admit the clear light through transparent tiles, and such as the vaulted baths with pipes let into their walls for the purpose of diffusing the heat, which maintains an even temperature in their lowest as well as in their highest spaces. Why need I mention the marble with which our temples and our private houses are resplendent, or the rounded and polished masses of stone, by means of which we erect colonnades and buildings roomy enough for nations, or our signs for whole words which enable us to take down a speech, however rapidly uttered, matching speed of tongue by speed of hand. All this sort of thing has been devised by the lowest grade of slaves. Wisdom's seat is higher. She trains not the hands, but is mistress of our minds. Would you know what wisdom has brought forth to light, what she has accomplished? It is not the graceful poses of the body, or the varied notes produced by horn and flute, whereby the breath is received and, as it passes out or through, is transformed into voice. It is not wisdom that contrives arms, or walls, or instruments useful in war. Nay, her voice is for peace, and she summons all mankind to concord. It is not she, I maintain, who is the artisan of our indispensable implements of daily use. Why do you assign to her such petty things? You see in her the skilled artisan of life. The other arts, it is true, wisdom has under her control, for he whom life serves is also served by the things which equip life. But wisdom's course is toward the state of happiness. Thither she guides us, thither she opens the way for us. She shows us what things are evil and what things are seemingly evil. She strips our minds of vain illusion. She bestows upon us a greatness which is substantial. But she represses the greatness which is inflated and showy but filled with emptiness. And she does not permit us to be ignorant of the difference between what is great and what is but swollen. Nay, she delivers to us the knowledge of the whole of nature and of her own nature. She discloses to us what the gods are and of what sort they are. What are the nether gods, the household deities, and the protecting spirits? What are the souls which have been endowed with lasting life and have been admitted to the second class of divinities? Where is their abode, and what their activities, powers, and will? Such are wisdom's rites of initiation, by means of which is unlocked not a village shrine, but the vast temple of all the gods, the universe itself, whose true apparitions and true aspects she offers to the gaze of our minds. For the vision of our eyes is too dull for sights so great. Then she goes back to the beginnings of things, to the eternal reason which was imparted to the whole, and to the force which inheres in all the seeds of things, giving them the power to fashion each thing according to its kind. Then wisdom begins to inquire about the soul, whence it comes, where it dwells, how long it abides, into how many divisions it falls. Finally, she has turned her attention from the corporeal to the incorporeal, and has closely examined truth and the marks whereby truth is known.